Hello and welcome to Millennial 2020. It's the seventh night now, and there are four streams tonight. The next one is with Red Pill Germany, then Bitcoin Beginnings, that's with Carl Thorburn, and then Jared Taylor. And Jared Taylor will be on DLive only, so please make sure you're subscribed to that, to me on DLive. But first, it's Dangerfield. It's Chris Dangerfield. Now, I should also say, before we get to that, E. Michael Jones has been rescheduled. So tomorrow night, there are going to be five hangouts. Do we still use the word hangouts? I can't remember. Anyway, there are going to be five streams, and E. Michael Jones will be at midnight GMT tomorrow night. So, with that said, I'll just do the necessary linky stuff with Telegram and so forth. There we go. And Dangerfield, welcome to Millennial 2020.
What an absolute pleasure. 3 years on the trot, I think, now.
Yes, I think it would. I think 2018 was the first time. I wasn't aware of you with Millennial 2017, but by 2018, I think, had you started doing the Three Stooges by that time?
I think that's probably where that link was made. I went and had a look at it and survived about 5 minutes. I don't watch my content back anyway, not because I've got any issues with my voice, because I've been in stand-up and I've been in bands all my life, so I'm used to hearing my voice, but it was just a bit, you know, when things are significant and important to you, they're really significant and they're really important. And then when they're no longer that important and you see yourself, bloody, I was like, oh, come on. You know, it's like when I watch videos around that Gamergate period, when I'm talking about, you know, transgender toilets, and it's like, it's the most important thing in the world to me. And today well, lack of a better phrase, couldn't give a shit about gender, gender-neutral toilets.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. In 2015, that stuff did seem important, and I guess it was important for a lot of people who were. I mean, I started it in 2014, knowing Western civilization is in a terrible condition, sure. And I don't think I knew that. I don't think I believed at that point that it was literally the end of Western civilization. I do now. But definitely I knew that things were very, very serious. But then you'd get people who were more concerned with, who were baffled rather than doomers. They were more like just, well, what the hell is going on? Why are these feminists always moaning about this and that and this trans thing and gay marriage? We never voted for that. And mass immigration, Islam. You'd get people who were still feeling around and trying to work out the scope of the problem. But, I mean, a lot of them still don't get the scope of the problem, even now, of course. I think that, I won't name names, but there are people who still think that this is actually quite a trivial problem. And it's just, there are just some silly people who are woke, the woke people. They don't get it. This is actually a very deep civilizational malaise.
Sure. I think something else that affected me was, for various reasons, 2020 has made me, well, I might as well actually go into it. I mean, once I turned up in that Times article, I don't know if you're aware, I don't know if anyone watching is aware, there was a Hope Not Hate done some, what they usually do, they decided to call out loads of dissident YouTubers. And the Times picked it up, and I was in that article, and the article was about terrorism. It was about people who are actually planting bombs. They had these images that I had never seen before. I wouldn't be surprised if they made them up, you know, skulls wearing Waffen SS helmets and just bizarre images that had nothing to do with my experience of the dissident right.
Was it a Photoshop of you holding a bomb or
something?
Well,
it might just as well have been. But they had me in this, you know, sandwiched in there. And although they couldn't outright say I was involved, you know, the implication was, and, you know, they said I was grooming teenage Nazis. and this stuff's serious. I just thought I had to step back from that. And I luckily, about 3 weeks before that all happened, I'd already decided to make some changes to my account. I thought now the climate has changed. YouTube, when the glory days of like 2010, you say anything you want, you build up a back catalogue, you make money out of your back catalogue, people can find your channel, they can binge watch 500-600 videos, and I had about 600 videos. But before the Times article, I started thinking, my 600 videos are actually... the potential is for people to use that content against me. Nearly all my videos are improvised. I've written about 2 scripts, and a lot of it's jokey, a lot of it's edgy jokey, and people can take that stuff out of context. They can put together...
Let me just interject briefly, because I know that this is an important story that you're telling, and I don't want to interrupt it, but... I mean, Hope Not Hate still use against me something that I said as a joke four years ago at the end of 2016. And it was, I mean, I said that I was, I think I might be pro-slavery. It was a joke.
I know exactly the point.
Someone had asked me, what's your most controversial or your most outrageous right-wing opinion? So it was like 2 in the morning. I'd been streaming for 2 hours. I was exhausted. And so I just said, there we go. Obviously a joke. And I've corrected it. I've clarified multiple times. Surprisingly enough, I'm not pro-slavery. Mm. But Hope Not Hate continue to use this because it's useful to them and they can get away with doing that. I mean, they shouldn't be able to get away with doing that. And this is, again, why I wish that we had... This is, you know, people often scoff at me when I say that the movement needs big funding. But this is an example of exactly why. We should be able to just fucking sue these cunts.
Yeah.
Like, you are misrepresenting me. You're deliberately, you're knowingly misrepresenting me. And but we can't because we don't have the funding to do that. So, well, and then they will use that to get me deplatformed, get me banned from things. So, yeah, we need funding, surprisingly enough.
Well, that's something we can get onto a bit later, because I've been pulling what's left of my hair out recently about this whole grifting thing. You're grifting. People are voluntarily donating to your stream, you grifter. You don't get that on the left. The left aren't complaining about earning money. It's just all us lot. I get it every day. Emails sent to me.
That's a problem from within our movement. And yeah. There's a lot to say about that. I mean, I haven't asked for money. I did the other night, just as a one-off, because someone else brought it up. But other than that, I haven't asked for money since March 2019, March last year. And people still moan at me for that.
But I think that's to your detriment. I think that's to your detriment. And I think it's to your detriment because of the environment you find yourself in. Anyone watching this channel, give Woe some money. He's doing five streams every day almost. Well, this is hard to organize. Four. Believe me, I do one stream. I cark out for an hour afterwards. Doing 5 a day. Give him some money. But I'd say that you don't ask for money because that environment is so toxic. If you were to, he's asking for money. How dare he? He's only put 5 hours work in today.
I mean, in my specific case, I can understand people not donating because I, you know, apart from Millennial, I've hardly made anything for 2 years, right? That's a specific case. And this is why I don't really ask for money, because I don't feel it, I think it'd be cheeky. But the more broad point is there is a thing in this movement of you should be doing this for the love of it. You should be doing this because you care about your country. Of course I fucking do. I mean, if you were doing this for the money, you'd be doing something else. you could make a lot more money far more easily by doing anything but this.
Yeah.
So it's a silly thing for people to say, but I think it's a sort of purity spiraling thing. It's like,
without a doubt.
Does he ask for money? Well, then he's a fake. He's a grifter. It's you should be suffering. You should not be able to get a normal job, and you shouldn't be asking for money. You should be just the lowest position you could be in, and then I'll believe that you're genuine.
Absurd.
It is insane, and it's absurd. It's insane, and it's not how our enemies got anywhere. Our enemies never had this mentality. They thought they were completely shameless about it. It was there. thinking, well, I'm doing something good, so why shouldn't I get remunerated for that? Their attitude was, we want as much money as possible because that creates options and it strengthens us and so on. But of course, it's a completely different. And I remember Hope Not Hate again saying that I was begging. They used the word begging for money. You know, but when they put out a funding drive on Twitter to ask for like tens of thousands of pounds to make up for their budget shortfall, well, they're not begging.
No, right? Of course not.
They're doing a good thing. they're doing good work, ruining people's lives.
yeah. Madness.
Scum. So we were talking about how the movement has evolved and
I realized that the environment's different. I had 500-600 videos and I realized that people can chop bits out of it. You know, I was seeing the sorts of things that were happening to other people, and I thought, you know, for the handfuls of views, literally like 20 a week, my old content got, it's not worth having that there. It makes me vulnerable. So I deleted it. You can't even put it in private. You can get strikes for private videos. YouTube, it might be private to the viewers, but it's not private to YouTube. I got a strike for a video I'd already deleted, but that's a different story. So luckily I got rid of most of that, but they'd obviously done their research before I'd done all that, because in that Times thing, it was amazing. The quote they put in there was, I'd done a series of videos called Talking with Teens. And I said to my viewers, are there any teenagers? I said, not 13, 14, 16 and above, really, who want to come on my channel and talk about life as a 16-year-old or as a teenager. That was it. That was it. They made out it was some kind of Nazi recruitment drive. And you know, it wasn't. One of them was this kid with Asperger's who couldn't get a girlfriend. One of them was a kid whose parents were disabled and life was a nightmare for him. It was a wide range of different topics, different kids at university and that. And one of them who had right-wing views was saying that he does try and get his right-wing ideas into debates at university. And I said to him, listen, I'd suggest not doing that. Keep your head down, because the liberal machine doesn't want people like you at university. Basically, trying to encourage him to keep his place at university. And they used that quote. They said, Dangerfield even told one of them to keep his head down because the liberal machine, as if it was some kind of evil thing. You can't encourage people to keep their place at university. So
that's like saying, like, okay, you've got a message, so just blare it out indiscriminately, regardless of the consequences, if it will actually work or not, if it will backfire on you or not. Just talk, just say it. That's retarded. The real world doesn't work like that. I mean, again, you've got to look at what our enemies did. They didn't, and I've said this so many times to so many people about so many different examples. In 1967, they campaigned to legalize homosexual sex, right, behind closed doors, between two consenting adults. What they didn't do in 1967 was say to the British public of 1967, we want Drag Queen Story Hour. Because they knew that the British public of 1967 were not ready to hear that, to tolerate it. They would go nuts if they heard that. So they met the public where they were. That's just human communication, you know, meeting people where they are. This seems to be completely obvious. I don't understand why. So that's to do with what you actually say, but also the context in which you say it. So you don't do this at a fucking dinner, like a cheese and wine evening or someone, a friend's wedding or something like that. It's specific context where this will work, sure. And where it'll just backfire on you and turn you into a leper.
the crazy thing is, it's people like Hope Not Hate that made me say to this bloke, don't say things like that at university, because, you know, that is, they're part of that problem. And then, you know, they used it against me and the Times used it against me. So the point is, though, the upshot is the climate has changed, and this idea of having a channel with hundreds of videos, I think that's finished. I think it's interesting that people, especially on the dissident right, they're now on DLive, you know, that everyone's gagging for BitChute to sort out streaming, because I think streaming's where it's going now. You don't want all that stuff out there that makes you really, really vulnerable. You want to do a stream, people watch it live. When it's finished, it's done. You know, the amount of people who are putting videos on YouTube now, and when it's finished, it's gone. You don't get to see it. And people are like, oh, does anyone know where I can see that? No, it's gone. And what I do now, I stream twice daily. And when I've got five streams live, I chop a couple off the end. I record two more, I chop two off the end. So there's only ever five or six up there. Now, if I do an interview stream, or if I do a stream that's quite playful and not really political, I'll leave that up. But yeah, I realized this year that I'm not going to let my YouTube channel make me vulnerable. I'm going to do something else. And I've changed from being reactive to proactive. I'm not interested in looking at the news and laughing at it or getting all mad about it. I'm more into trying to give advice or discuss ideas that we can actually do in our daily lives. Again, because you have to, because you're not allowed to do that other stuff anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely a different climate. I don't like, as you said, you can't really afford to have a big archive of all your past stuff anymore. I don't like that because I loved that there were all these old videos that I was still proud of. Some of them I was a wee bit embarrassed about, but you know, from the early days. But still, I was happy to have them up, and that was a way that people discovered my channel and discovered me. But YouTube throttled that anyway because they stop recommending you stop appearing in the recommended lists. So, but meantime, so these videos were no longer useful to me in that sense, but they were of they made me vulnerable.
Yeah.
But of course, the thing is, when you take them down, that means that no one can watch them anymore, and that is a shame. There are videos that I made. I mean, there's basically nothing left on my channel about race, ethnicity, Islam.
Same.
There's nothing left, and I think it's a fucking shame.
Yeah. Well, this is the mad thing. You can go in my back catalogue. You can you know, YouTube are fine with stories of when I was a junkie, when I was a crackhead, doing the most horrific things. No, that's fine. And the press won't call me out about that. Oh, no, that's no problem. You know, you can inject in your groin. You can take a dump in the middle of the street. You know, you can have a girl stop breathing when you're having sex with her. Those videos aren't a problem. This is YouTube. You know, you're fine. And those videos are literally still up. But everything about race, no, got rid of all of it. You just can't. You can't get that conversation isn't allowed unless you're pro those ideas. You'll lose your channel.
Yeah, I mean, this is what's so frightening about YouTube. They actually got rid of the slogan "broadcast yourself." That used to, for a long time, that was YouTube's slogan for like 10, 11, 12 years. They got rid of it. It sticks, actually, once Sticks Hexenhammer made this point about a year ago, that, or less, 6 months ago, that YouTube got big in the first place because it wasn't the mainstream media and it wasn't the authorized word. It was little ordinary people putting their voices out there and growing big because it was independent voices basically. But now YouTube has completely, I mean, it's obviously decided we really don't want this anymore. It's what made the platform in the first place, but we don't need it anymore. And it's causing us a headache. We're having to employ thousands of moderation staff and censors. So I think that they've just decided to basically get rid of all of it. And I think in time they will shut down every channel that's political, unless it's explicitly progressive. I think even centrist channels will go as well.
I think it's an interesting point because it's been a bait and switch, really. You know, make a channel, do this, establish the most successful video hosting platform on the internet. And let's not forget, after Google, it's the biggest search engine. People go to YouTube after Google more than anywhere else to search things. You know, they don't mind that the content is video. And I think it's now like it's an albatross. They're absolutely gutted. But they can't just shut it down because then they hand that power over to someone like BitChute. So I think you're right. I think they have board meeting after board meeting. They're pulling their hair out. What are we going to do about this?
You're
lumbered with it, Alphabet.
Yeah, they're in this weird position where they can't afford to hand the cultural power to some other website, so that of being the political video place, that because that's a huge amount of cultural power for any platform to handle. They want to have that power, but at the same time, they don't want to have those political videos on their platform. So it's a very difficult dilemma for them. And I guess what they're doing is just slowly throttling it. But I think what they'll also do is I think they'll set up rivals to BitChute. I think Silicon Valley will deliberately create. Because I do believe that BitChute, for what it's worth, I have talked to the BitChute guy once or twice, and he is not very right-wing. He's not a nationalist.
Yeah, sure.
That's worth saying. He's just a guy who genuinely believes in free speech. That's actually the truth. But he does genuinely believe in free speech, and that's the thing. Silicon Valley don't. So what I think they'll do is they'll create rivals to BitChute, and in order to drive traffic away from BitChute, and then they'll just shut down each of those.
They'll have a struggle though. I talk to Ray a lot, and BitChute is absolutely smashing it. He said, I think they got 40 million unique viewers in November. It's now something like, I think it's something like the 800th most popular website in America. So out of everything, but it's about 800. And, you know, this is two guys. This is Ray and his mate. And what's making BitChute a real threat to them now isn't a handful of Nazis, because no one really cares about that. It's that it's now starting to look like YouTube in 2010. There are people doing makeup, how to put your makeup on, whatever they're called. There are people doing unboxing videos. Oh, it suddenly isn't this evil dissident right channel. It's a video hosting platform, and it's growing remarkably fast.
Yes, it is. And
in terms of what YouTube are going to do about that, I can remember a few years ago when they considered Jordan Peterson to be problematic. Well, I asked my subscribers the other day to give me a one in the chat. How many times you get do you get recommended Jordan Peterson videos? And everyone said yes. I get recommended Jordan Peterson after whatever I watch now. And I think that's the angle they're taking.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Jordan Peterson is this guy who's like, it's like they just wheel him out constantly, like a thousand times a day. He gets wheeled onto the stage to do the thing. I don't know what to say about that. He's ineffectual. He's unconvincing. Yes, it's true that you should tidy your room. I'm hoping that my background doesn't look too untidy while I say those words. But yes, it's true that you should get your own life sorted out. I've always said that. I will make a point of emphasizing that in future. I think it's better for people to be doing that than to be thinking about, to be leapfrogging that to, oh, I've got to change the world. Best if you get your own life under control first, then you're in a better position to change the world. Anyway, that's his one. That's really the only good thing that he said, as far as I can see. Like Jordan Peterson, the rest of it is just flim flam and waffle. As he said it himself, that he's trying to divert people, young men, away from nationalism, identity politics,
and that's what YouTube are now trying to do with him as well. I think that's the angle they're trying to. They're now trying to say, all right, you don't have to be a progressive, but how about this? Because, you know, you don't have to go over there and look at all that stuff, because, look, we like Jordan. Look, here he is. Yeah. Look, loads of it. Read it. Watch it.
Fucking take your Jordan Peterson. Be grateful. Enjoy it. The message is, don't worry. You don't have to be a progressive. You can be a complete cuck instead.
There you go.
Completely ineffectual instead. So that's the option. But it is hilarious. Again, it maps into this thing that I have this theory that there are two poisons. One of them is progressivism or communism, and the other is libertarianism or individualism. And each of the, like, there are two different poisons designed to appeal to two different key parts of the European psyche. Altruism, communism, progressivism, and in the individual, the sort of innovation, that independent-mindedness, that's what libertarianism appeals to. And basically, you can get almost any white person with one of those two poisons. And that's why they're there, because they both end up in the same place, which is that you're an atomized, demented individual with no history, no identity, no meaning in your life. You're just meat. You're just meat that consumes and buys things.
Sure.
Each of those two poisons results in the same end result. So I think that Jordan Peterson is basically, he's probably a well-meaning guy who has been utilized to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So either you go with feminism, YouTube will give you these two options. It's either fucking communist Marxist feminism or it's Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
Those are your options. And of course, they'll also throw Douglas Murray in there occasionally, you know, a bit spicy. Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing about Douglas is that's hilarious is, you know, this is the man that writes The Strange Death of Europe. But ask him for a solution, and the geezer runs a mile. He doesn't want to go anywhere near the solutions. And so that's why you'll get Douglas Murray. We can all sit back and read it and go, he's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Put the book down and then watch some Jordan. But you can't dare say, well, look, we know this is now happening. Here's some people who've got some ideas how we can maybe change the course of history. No, you could.
Yeah, at that point, it's, you know, Jordan Peterson will tell you to, well, don't get into the identity politics. And and Douglas Murray will say, this is reminding me of the 1930s.
There you go.
And so, okay, I mean, that's where he always goes to immediately is ideas from the 1930s. It always fucking does that. he nods his head to signal to the interviewer to nod his head in agreement, and it always works. But this is his sort of cocky, just don't care about. I don't know what to say. I get so exasperated whenever I start talking about Douglas Murray because he's so annoying. Mm-hmm. Because he comes across as very intelligent, erudite, but I just think he's selling. He's just selling a sort of very discerning, stuffy version of cuckoldry and cowardice. I want to like him, but I just wish that he would man up.
Well, no, that you nailed it. It's that cowardice. It's like looking at someone dying and just writing about them dying. But and the last chapter is, and then they died. Okay, thanks for your help. But I just before we move on, because I can feel that's happening, I just want people watching to just enjoy the fact that, you know, we all hate YouTube. We hate what it's done. We hate what they've done to us all. We hate the bait and switch. But it is a real pest for them. It's causing them big problems, and that's at least something we can enjoy.
Well, the fact is they're still writing reports about us. They're still they're still campaigning against us. They're still lobbying social media to ban us and so on. So they're obviously still are worried about it. I mean, you know, from my point of view, I don't really want, and I never did want to be involved in politics, direct politics, because I always knew I wouldn't be any good at that. But I do take an interest in dissidence, in general opposition to what I see as an encroaching, frankly, at this point, an encroaching police state. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was always against political correctness, that kind of thing. So that remains the case, and I think that's enough to make them worried about you. You know, if you don't need to be, you know, an explicitly whatever anti-immigration, anti-Islam, anti-LGBT, just the fact that you're an independent voice, that you don't have the rainbow flag somewhere on your channel, that you're not voicing support for whatever the latest BLM, that's enough to make them think, okay, you're not on board. Because if you were on board, we would know you were on board. And I think it's got to this point where you're either with them or they assume that you're completely against them.
But I think there's ways around it, because, again, coming off of the back of that, rethinking what I was going to do as a channel and deleting all the content, you know, this year I've mainly been telling people to start looking after themselves, start dressing better, start dressing well, look after you, get some nice shoes, get a suit made. And this is where I'm going. This is what my content's about. Set up neighborhood watch organizations, you know, community building that actually works. And I think they're going to struggle to ban channels like that. And the thing is, it's overtly nationalist to talk about that. You know, set up revenue streams for yourself, some passive, dress well, have self-respect, look after your body, set up things that involve your community. And if people start doing those sorts of things, that will help the nationalist project as a whole immeasurably. And YouTube are going to struggle with that. Are they going to shut my channel down because I've been telling people to see a bespoke tailor?
You know, the latest horror that YouTube is profiting from is giving a platform to people who talk about this.
but exactly. You know, I see channels like Renew Britannia. Wes, bless him, a young man, set up a channel, done loads of work, got very popular, gone. They just, you know, no strikes or anything. They just got rid of him. And I just thought, Wes, and I told him this, you know, you're in the 216 model of dissidents, and that they've got the TOS now to just wipe you off. You can't do that anymore. But what you can do, instead of that reactive stuff, don't talk about, I can't even think of
the latest atrocity.
Yeah, don't talk about that. Talk about things we can actually do to be proactive, and it kind of keeps us safe, and it's worth doing.
Yes, and it's also more productive. I mean, I think it's better. It just makes you feel better than constantly ruminating over what the left has done now, or what, you know, some foreign element has done now. Because then you're just their victim. You're constantly waiting for them to do the next thing so that you can then be outraged about it. That isn't a good, it's unhealthy. And, you know, and I did unknowingly, unwittingly do that for a while. And I remember one stream I did in 2016 with my two friends, Reactionary Expat and Pale Hominid, where we were going over the news. We did it once a month, and we were going over the news of what everything that had happened in that month. And it was just unbelievable. I think it was in like June, July that year. And it was just an astonishing catalogue of things that had happened across Europe with the migrants and so on. And I did think while I was doing it, is this actually helping anyone? And then in the next year, in 2017, I started to have more doubts, because I started to think, well, we all know all this already, and there must be something more. And that's what I've always been thinking about. That's just partly why I was inactive for so long, because I was thinking, well, what, now that we know the problem, or now that we at least have enumerated the symptoms of the problem, now what? Because there's no point just continuing to do that, because that really is just, that actually is grifting. Yeah, that's just, you know, milking people's disaffection. So what to do next? And I really wasn't sure. But it's at the point, I've kind of reached a similar conclusion to the one you've reached, which is it's better to just encourage people to work on themselves. And actually the best way you can do that is to do it yourself and be an example, I think, to other people. So, you know, that's what I intend to do in future. I wanted to do it this year, but things got waylaid by COVID and the lockdown, but and by other things as well that we don't need to go into. But yeah, that was my plan for this year.
No, for sure. And look, I understand there is an argument perhaps that, well, we all know what the problems are, but maybe youngsters youngsters don't, but they live it. They go to their schools. They're seeing what's happening. You know, they're living it. They know what the problems are. Don't worry about that. They're not having to predict them. They live them. And you know, there's channels like This Is Why We Fight, very proactive, you know, talking about self-sufficiency. And they've got this ward idea they do. It's a very small channel at the moment, but it's really optimistic. And people come away from that feeling empowered.
What channel's that?
It's called This Is Why We Fight. It's very small, but they're actually trying to strategize about the things that we need to do. We need to build stronger communities. We need to be more sufficient, self-sufficient, and we need to get away from corporations. The reason I talk about clothes, and my subscribers are getting proper sick of it, because if we've had a different culture imposed upon us. When I see people walking around in sportswear, that's not English. That's nothing to do with our history. That wasn't a development that come through the Edwardians and the Victorians and through the wars and all of a sudden. No, that's been imposed on us by massive corporations who have outright shown that they hate us. They hate us. And I see loads of people walking around, especially the youth, in what is essentially African American streetwear. And it's appalling. And if you're going to support that and give your money to those corporations, bearing in mind your polyester trousers are going to wear out in a year and you're going to have to buy a new pair, compared with a bespoke suit, which is in the classic style, which is part of our ancestry, part of our history, a local tailor with cloth sourced from England or Scotland or the UK. It's becoming more local. That is overtly nationalist. And it's going to last you 20, 30 years. And these are the things that I'm now talking about. Because all that other stuff you were saying about those channels where people read the news, I can't watch them. I don't want to see white people getting the shit kicked out of them for breakfast. I don't want to finish my day's work and, I see, they burnt down another church in France. It does depress you. And then the problem with that is everyone's getting blackpilled. Blackpilled gets rid of hope and optimism. And without hope and optimism, you can't win any fights. You lose them all.
Yeah, very much. I think it's an interesting thing because you've got to be careful about the lessons that you learn, because the lessons that you learn will affect your behavior going forward. But the lessons you learn are selected by the things that you do. So if you do things that are going to result in failure, then you're going to learn the lesson of failure.
Sure.
You know, in other words, if you focus on what's going bad in the world, then that is going to get you down, and then that in turn is going to make you feel impotent. And that's not surprising. And so I think you're absolutely right that it's better to focus on what you can do, and as you say, a proactive attitude. Because God knows there's enough shit going on. I mean, you know, seriously, I'm the same as you. I cannot watch a lot of stuff that once upon a time I watched, you know, religiously. I just can't do it anymore. It's too depressing. Now, someone made the point in the live chat that there are a lot of people just arriving at certain realizations, and they do need to see this stuff. And that's true, but I'm happy for other people to show them this stuff.
Spend a couple of hours on BitChute. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, the other thing is, look, England, I keep saying England, but Great Britain is still probably one of the best places on the planet to live. It still is, by a long chalk. It's a fantastic place. If you want to generate revenue, the UK is a fantastic place to be in. You can set up, you can generate wealth there. The amount of people I hear going, well, there's no jobs. Fuck jobs. Generate wealth. Make a job. I live in a country where there's no welfare. If you haven't got any money, you don't eat. And so people create wealth. They generate it so that they can eat. And they manage to feed families of 20, 30 people because they have to. How easy it is to do that in the UK is unbelievable. It's still a fantastic nation. And also, if we're generating wealth, setting up businesses, making passive and active revenue streams, if we're doing that, that money isn't available for, let's just say, other people. It makes us stronger. It's overtly nationalist to make money. It's overtly nationalist to be an entrepreneur. And so encourage people to do this, especially young people, because they're walking around saying, well, there's no jobs.
Get into crypto. this is one of the reasons I want people to get into crypto, because I know there are no jobs. It's shit. And it's not something that I want to take lightly at all or trivialize. It's but you know, as Dangerfield says, you could start your own business, or you could, you know, get into crypto and investments. And I know how ridiculous that sounds to a lot of people who are young, who don't have any money. But just trust me on this. You don't need to trust me on this. You can do what you like, but I would advise that you get into crypto. And I definitely would advise that you look for other ways that you can make yourself useful to the community. And including your local community as well, not just the online community.
There are, I mean, look, I've got crypto. I've made and lost a fortune in crypto. It's gambling. That's all it is, really. But I think if you spread your portfolio, a bit of precious metals, and you haven't got to go and buy a kilo of gold, you can go and buy a gram of gold. You know, get one of them in every few months, get a couple of grams of silver, then chip a little bit into your crypto. But you know, there's just so many ways of generating money in a nation like England, in somewhere like Great Britain. You know, you don't only have to wait for someone to give you a job. You can just find ways to make money. You know, I lost the one that I had, though. I had an example of something. But I'd be a bit careful about just putting all your money into crypto. I mean, a good old ISA is still a good way, a reliable way of making your money go up. I'd probably say if you haven't got a lot of money, an ISA is a better idea than crypto at this stage. But you know, if you come into a few grand, maybe put a grand into crypto and then 4 grand in your ISA and get your 20 grand annual ISA allowance.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I would rather be telling people, and that I would rather people were finding. You know, this is much more useful to you than, oh, another mosque built in this and another town. Yeah, that is bad. It's depressing. It's another sign of the cultural change. But the issue is, well, what are you going to do? You know, what can be done about it? And that's something I'm not sure we should go into in this stream. But I think that we need to start thinking very practically. Put it that way, because dreaming that, well, if we complain enough about this, then the powers that be will change their minds about it. That's obviously not the case. They would have changed their minds about it in 1960 if they were going to do that, or 1970, sure. But not now. So, we're veering into territory that I don't think is safe for YouTube anymore. But all I would say is, I'm not saying don't care about this. Of course you should care about this. But I think that you should approach it in ways that are realistic. And because there are so many people who just are not realistic about these things.
I think that the point I was going to say was there are countless resources on the internet for entrepreneurs who haven't got a pot to piss in. You can go and join these forums and you can read countless stories of people who are in situations like you might be, where you've just left school or you've just left uni. You're living at your parents' house and there's no employment or there's nothing exciting. You don't want to wash dishes down your local hospital. And there's thousands upon thousands of stories in full detail, because people are proud of what they've done, how they've done it, how they set up their business. There's no one way to be an entrepreneur. There's the way you do it that's successful. And rather than sitting around watching videos of bombs going off all the time or God knows what, you could be spending that time on entrepreneurial forums, reading how people done it, doing that kind of research, looking at your options, start putting a little bit of money together away. So when you've got your 5 grand, you can make a little investment and then you can start turning it over, doing a product or a service or whatever it is you want to do based on the stuff you've learned from these forums. And again, that will make us stronger. That makes us stronger as individuals. when you're stronger as an individual and you started generating wealth, you're more likely to have bigger families. So if we're having bigger families across the nation, you know, once you've got bigger families happening, then you start getting stronger communities. And then you know, you can obviously see where I'm going with that. It's just a question of being proactive about our future rather than just dwelling on this reactive stuff.
That
had a function 4 years ago, but now not so much.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we're at 45 minutes now, so we should probably finish in about 15 minutes. So, because, you know, just for the sake of my health. But before we do that, would you like to talk about 2020? Because that was what we were thinking we were going to do. We've actually gone on a 45-minute detour, but we were going to talk about the year, or your general feelings about this year. So what would you say about that?
Well, it seemed to start with I am the eternal optimist, and I'm eternally hopeful because I know that strategically that's important, psychologically that's important. And the year seemed to start very optimistically on various fronts, various projects. And I remember thinking, this is interesting. Got to be a little bit careful with this bit because, again, we're on YouTube, but what's just happened in America seems to be quite a disaster, really. The year's ended disastrously because I think without the God Emperor, do I really have to say, I know he's not our man. Why does everyone always say that after they mention him? I know he's not our man. All right, everyone knows he's not our man. But the alternative really isn't our man, and he's against us. And
oh yes,
that's been quite, you know, when I heard Greg Johnson talking about the realities of, I think it was Greg, the realities of what is going to happen when that man starts doing things concerning people like us, it seems to have ended quite the opposite. The year ended quite on the opposite of how it started. I started the year thinking, wow, this is amazing, look what's happening here. And this little turnout has proven shocking. And again, I know you can't say too much, but I'm convinced what's being said that happened is what happened.
It's amazing how cryptic we have to be.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. But yeah, so am I. I'm also convinced that what is being said happened did happen. Yeah.
And you're not allowed to talk about it, which doesn't make me think, oh, okay, then I'm wrong. It makes me think, well, yeah, thanks for confirming my suspicions.
I've got a good thing that I could read out to you, because I was thinking how to fit this into to Millennial, and I found this thing. I think I might have accidentally closed it. Ah, shit, I think I have. Damn, how annoying. There was a thing that I found on Facebook, because I hardly ever go to Facebook nowadays, but I did the other day, and someone was basically making the point that imagine if we'd had the attitude to news and commentary that we have today, imagine if we'd had the same attitude throughout history, basically so many things wouldn't have happened. Like even the founding of America and then the American Civil War and so on, all of these things, it would have been fact-checking, you know, rumor control, authorized sources. All of this would have thwarted any sort of innovation or change, basically. You see, that's what this is now. What's emerged with social media is an engine to maintain the status quo and to direct people in certain ways, but especially to just maintain the status quo.
Well, also to maintain an illusion of
yes.
the status quo, a particular interpretation of it. So it's not like you even get to see what they want you to see. You get to see the illusion they want you to see. It's barking mad.
Yeah. It's incredible. Hold on a second. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's this illusion. And I do think that, and I talked about this with Apollonian Jam last night, which is on BitChute, by the way. It is amazing how distant most people are, the general public, from our understanding of things. You know, they really do believe what they see on the BBC or on Fox News or CNN or Twitter, Facebook, to a great extent still. And it's a shame because, you know, 5 years ago, we really thought that we were replacing the mainstream media, and we probably were in actuality. It probably was the case. But then they joined forces with Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and then banned us, or deplatformed us and throttled us and so on. Now, that's not the end of the matter, and I don't want it, you know, I don't want the end of it to be this note of despair. I'm just noting that they have to put a huge amount of effort into maintaining the public's ignorance and acquiescence.
But it's rather desperate that all they can do is try and silence us. And you know, look at the speed that BitChute's grown. Look at the speed that Parler's grown, the speed that Brand New Tuber. There's all loads of others popping up. I think that cat's out of the bag and they can't win that. I think it's the desperate flailing of an empire on its last legs. The mainstream media empire of the 20th century is literally just going, shut it down, shut them up, just shut them up, and it's not working. It's going to be there's a temporary kind of sort of, you know, the balance of power has gone back to them. But as these other platforms grow, I think that's kind of, you know, faith. Or look at all the surveys into the mainstream media. Faith is just going through the floor. You know, people just don't go for it, and that's people now. Zoomers, you know, come on, they're not buying any of that nonsense. I'm absolutely confident they're not.
I've managed to find this thing, and I'll read it, and then we can maybe wrap up. It is actually quite lengthy, but I'll go through it. Did you happen to catch the hearings with Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey? I thought it was fascinating. A lot of interesting points were raised. I like doing thought experiments about this issue. Imagine if Facebook and Twitter had existed at the time of the American Revolution. Could the revolution have occurred at all? I mean, if the largest disseminators of information to the populace had refused to let ideas and debates happen openly in the public square, then where would America be right now? Would Twitter and Facebook block the organizers of the Boston Tea Party from organizing on the grounds of inciting violence and criminal activity against the reigning British government? Would Twitter and Facebook block the likes of Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, from publishing their ideas and advancing ideas of limited governmental power and personal freedom and liberty? And so on and so on. It comes out with other examples. But I think, I'll just read the last paragraph. I also wonder about social media companies' policies on conspiracy theories. Some actually turn out to be true, like Project MKUltra, when the United States government via the CIA understood illegal and questionably moral undertook moral experiments on their own citizens in an effort to force confessions and have a type of mind control of people. It's all documented. My point is, without the freedom and ability to speak, discuss, debate, and examine issues freely and openly, we lose the ability to ever get at the truth. I feel that that's a danger in any free and open society and people. So, I thought that was quite an interesting post.
But on that, and I think it's relevant with what we've been talking about YouTube and the internet, don't forget that the ClearNet, you know, the Google internet, it's only the tip of the iceberg. The internet is massive, almost infinite space. And if we did get banned to that extent, if you couldn't say anything that was vaguely controversial or dissident, I think we'll be using Tor browsers. And the day that happens, the day we're now going into the dark web to have our conversations, we'll be absolutely free as a bird. I mean, I'm not into what's it called when things all speed up and it gets worse really quickly?
Accelerationism.
Yeah, I'm not really into accelerationism, but you know, the day that people like us are on the dark net, incredible, absolutely incredible, because Google, YouTube, Alphabet have got no place there. It's not theirs. We are currently fighting this on their terms in the clear net. But once we go under that, we rule that. We've got the technology there, not them. They don't, we get to chuck them out. and that's coming. I think that's coming. And what a fantastic, you know, you talk about crypto. Well, that's how I learned about crypto, because I had to use a Tor browser to make purchases in the darknet. But, you know, people talk about that these people owning the internet. They own a tiny little fraction of it. So I don't fear that we'll ever end up in a place where we can't talk.
Well, I hope not. I definitely hope not, because it just seems, certainly for me, it's just become an absolutely central part of my life. Even though I haven't done it much for the last 2 years, the experience of being able to communicate with a very large number of people is something that's just precious. I mean, it just changes your life, really. I mean, I know that if I get banned from YouTube, which is probably going to happen soon, I'll still have BitChute and I'll still have Telegram, and I have 2,500 people on there. So it's not like that would be the end of the matter. But still, it's not something I'm looking forward to be honest, because I do, even though I don't make much use of my channel these days, I do enjoy having it. I do enjoy the ability, you know, and it used to be great, you know, that's the thing. It's now something that I treat very, very delicately, but it used to be that you could just say whatever you liked, and it was a wonderful, wonderful feeling. To be able to just be candid, you know.
Wake up and your channel's gone every day.
Yeah, exactly.
But BitChute, Ray told me BitChute are going to have live streaming in 2021. And I went on the beta, and it's all there set up. They're just waiting to get it finished.
Oh, fantastic. That's great news.
It's all very well people saying, get on DLive. DLive isn't a free speech platform. It's just everyone over there is under the radar. It's not. Free speech platform.
No, but it is it's useful in the meantime. Sure. But it's definitely, I do agree with you that ultimately we need a platform that is dedicated to free speech, and that's where we will be safe. That's where it will be safe to speak openly. Although as I've said, I'm not actually that interested in talking about these very dangerous topics anymore, because I feel like I've said everything about it that I wanted to say. But yeah, it's interesting times we live in. Let's put it that way.
And look, let's not forget, life's always been a struggle. It's always been a struggle for resources and power. And that's where we are. Welcome to the world.
It's a nice way to end. All right, well, let's wrap it up there. So this is Chris Dangerfield. His channel is linked below. You can get to it there. And all right, you are on Telegram as well. You have a Telegram channel.
I'm on Telegram, yeah. t.me/strangerfield.
Okay.
I stream live twice a day, about 7:30 to 8, starts about 7:30, 8 o'clock a.m. English time, and then another one at 4 o'clock in the afternoon English time, every day.
All right, excellent. I was muted. Okay. Well, I'll end it there. I really enjoyed this one. I'm sure that everyone else did. And there's one super chat. Sorry, I should have forgot about that. Okay, this is just this is not really connected to what we were saying, but it's a $50 super chat. So
well done. Give this man some money.
Thank you. I have it. It's weird. Super chat seems to have died this year. I'm hardly getting any this year. So maybe it's something that people aren't aware that you can still do with Entropy. But anyway, here's one. Any opinion on Steve Franson teaming up with Nick Fuentes? I asked Franson on DLive if he'd be on Millennial this year. He was on in 2017. I think that's the only time he's been on. I asked him if he'd be on Millennial this year. He said no, he was going in a different direction. He also said that America First doesn't need any more talent in the leadership area, which raised my eyebrows. All the best, Woz. Well, this is about very, very, obviously very much the American scene. And I honestly have completely fallen out of sync with I mean, in 2015 and 16, there was a very close connection between Britain and especially me and the alt-right as such. But honestly, we've definitely drifted apart for various reasons. And at this point, it's Nick Fuentes and America First. I really don't know much about them. So, and I don't know much about Steve Franson either, to be honest. I know that he's on BitChute. I've got nothing against the guy. I watch his videos sometimes, but it just feels like, and this is weird to say this because there are actually quite a lot of Americans on Millennial this year, but I really feel like we're just operating in different arenas because of the First Amendment and the Second Amendment. That leads to a different culture in America where they have different presuppositions about the way civic life is. I think that it's, I don't know, it feels like there's a big distance. And so they have a different war to fight.
I think the biggest difference is our clock is ticking a lot faster than theirs, just due to the size of their nation.
Right.
I can't remember who said it, but they have the Kai Muros. They've got the luxury of white flight for about another 100 years. We haven't. You run out of London, you're in Birmingham.
Yes. It is a different thing. So do you have any comment on Steve Franson teaming up with Nick Fuentes? I don't, because I'm not familiar enough with the stuff.
I don't really know what I make of Nick Fuentes. I think it's probably quite a young audience. I think it serves a certain function. Actually, it's probably serving the function that we were talking about that YouTube channels were in 2016. It's probably bringing people in who aren't too aware of what's going on, and then they'll move off and go and end up somewhere more proactive. But I don't watch it enough to be able to help you earn that bullseye.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll just end it there then. I don't know either. So, okay. Well, this has been fun. It's been a lot of good points raised. So thank you for appearing on Millennial 2020, Dangerfield.
Thank you very much for asking me on. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll be back in about an hour, 45 minutes with Red Pill Germany. In the meantime, thanks for watching, and I'll see you later.